Late in 1946, Louis Strauss, one of Truman's appointees to the new Atomic Energy Commission, flew out to San Francisco and was met at the airport by Ernest Lawrence and Oppenheimer. Before discussing AEC business, Strauss took Oppenheimer aside and said he had something else to talk to him about. Strauss had met Oppenheimer only once before, late in the war. Pacing about on the concrete tarmac, Strauss explained that he was a trustee of the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey. At the moment, he chaired the trustees' search committee for a new director of the Institute. Oppenheimer's name was at the top of a list of 5 candidates, and now the trustees, Strauss said, had authorized him to offer Oppenheimer the post.
Oppenheimer expressed interest in the idea, but said that he needed time to think about it.
About a month later, in late January 1947, Oppenheimer flew to Washington, and over a long breakfast he listened to Strauss pitch him the job. On the phone later that day, Oppenheimer told Kitty that he had not made up his mind, but felt rather good about the idea. Strauss, he said, had very nice ideas about what Oppenheimer could do with the Institute, although they were not too realistic.
Oppenheimer remarked that there wasn't a scientist there in any science business, but he could soon change all that. The Institute was most famous as the home and intellectual refuge of Albert Einstein.
When Strauss had pressed Einstein to describe the ideal kind of man for the job of director, he had replied,
"Ah, that I can do gladly. You should look for a very quiet man who will not disturb people who are trying to think." For his part, Oppenheimer had not always thought of it as a place for serious scholarship. After visiting the Institute for the first time in 1934, he had written derisively to his brother, "Princeton is a madhouse, its solipsistic luminary shining in separate and helpless desolation." But now he saw it differently. It would take some thought and some concern to do a decent job, he told Kitty, but it was a thing he could do rather naturally. He assured her that if they moved to Princeton, they would still keep their Eagle Hill home for summers in Berkeley. Besides, he was tired of the long commutes to Washington. "It is impossible for me to live as I have been living this last winter, in airplanes." That year alone, he had made 15 transcontinental flights between Washington and California. Still undecided, Oppenheimer consulted one of his new Washington friends, Justice Felix Frankfurter, who had himself once been a trustee of the Institute. Frankfurter discouraged Oppenheimer, saying, "You won't be free for your own creative work. Why don't you go to Harvard?" When Oppie bristled at this suggestion, saying he knew why he shouldn't go to Harvard, Frankfurter referred him to another friend who knew Princeton well. This individual advised Oppenheimer, "Princeton was an odd sort of place, but if one had an idea of what to make of it, it was fine." Oppenheimer was inclined to accept this new challenge. It played to his administrative talents. It promised to leave him ample time to pursue his extracurricular government responsibilities, and its location was perfect. Short train rides from both Washington and New York City. Yet he took his time to mull it over, until finally, according to one report, the Oppenheimers heard a news broadcast on their car radio announcing that Robert Oppenheimer had been appointed director of the Institute for Advanced Study. "Well," Robert said to Kitty, "I guess that settles it." The New York Herald Tribune applauded the appointment as strikingly fit in an editorial. "His name is Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer, but his friends call him Oppie." The Tribune's editorialists fairly gushed with praise, describing him as a remarkable man, a scientist among scientists, a practical man with a streak of wit. One of the Institute's trustees, John F. Fulton, had lunch with Robert and Kitty in their home and afterwards scribbled his impressions of the new director in his diary. "In physical appearance, he is slender with rather slight features, but he has a piercing and imperturbable eye and a quickness in repartee that gives him great force, and he would immediately command respect in any company. He is only 43 years of age, and despite his preoccupation with atomic physics, he has kept up his Latin and Greek, is widely read in general history, and he collects pictures. He is altogether a most extraordinary combination of science and the humanities."
Louis Strauss, however, was annoyed that Oppenheimer had taken so long to make up his mind. A self-made millionaire, Strauss had started out life as a traveling shoe salesman with a high school education.
In 1917, when he was just 21 years old, he landed a job as an assistant to Herbert Hoover, an engineer and up-and-coming politician with a reputation as a progressive Teddy Roosevelt Republican. At the time, Hoover was running President Woodrow Wilson's food relief programs for refugees in war-torn Europe. Working alongside such other Hoover protégés as Harvey Bundy, a bright young Boston Brahmin lawyer, Strauss used the food relief job as a springboard to Wall Street. After the war, Hoover helped Strauss obtain a coveted position at the New York investment banking firm of Kuhn, Loeb. Hardworking and obsequious, Strauss soon married Alice Hanauer, the daughter of a Kuhn-Loeb partner.
By 1929, he himself was a full partner, making more than $1 million a year. He survived the 1929 crash relatively unscathed. During the 1930s, he became an ardent foe of the New Deal, but 9 months before Pearl Harbor, he persuaded the Roosevelt administration to give him a job in the Navy Department's Bureau of Ordnance. Later, he served as a special assistant to Navy Secretary James Forrestal, and he left the war with the honorary rank of Rear Admiral.
By 1945, Strauss had used his Wall Street and Washington connections to carve out a powerful position for himself in America's post-World War II establishment.
Over the next two decades, he would exercise a baleful influence over Oppenheimer's life.